Welcome, and thank you for joining the National Multiple Sclerosis Society's MS Learn Online Internet Program. I'm Rick Turner, your host and medical correspondent. For a person living with MS, the road to wellness involves more than treatment of the disease. Equally important are health promotion and prevention strategies, a strong support network of family and friends, satisfying work and leisure activities, a meaningful place in the community, and adequate attention to one's inner self. This webcast is the second of a three-part series that will focus on healthy living with MS. Today, we will concentrate on getting the most out of your doctor appointments. Joining us for this series is Dr. Lauren Rolak. Dr. Rolak is director of the Marshfield MS Center in Marshfield, Wisconsin. Welcome back to MS Learn Online, Dr. Rolak.
Thanks, Rick. It's good to be here.
Well, the National MS Society has a very helpful brochure titled Choosing the Right Healthcare Provider, and I encourage our listeners to check out this great resource. Dr. Rolak, as a healthcare provider, what do you think is important for a person with MS to consider when selecting a doctor?
Well, I think there are a number of issues that come into play. Certainly, when you find out that you have MS and you would like to then establish with an MS doctor, or if you're moving to a new location where, again, you need to set up with somebody, there are a few things that I think about as most important. I think one, obviously, is that you find a doctor who has a special interest and a special expertise in MS. Not all doctors do, not even all neurologists are particularly interested in this area of neurology. So that's the most important thing, is finding someone for whom MS is really the thing that they do. I think the local chapter of the National MS Society is very good at helping you with this. And I always advise people to look at two avenues where they can find a good doctor. One is their own primary care physician. In other words, your family doctor, your internist, your physician's assistant, the person who's providing your medical care. They've been interacting with doctors in their community. They know who their colleagues are. They've come to figure out who are the good MS doctors, and they can make a referral for you. If they're not sure, then I do recommend people call their local chapter, the National MS Society, and find out from them who are the doctors that have stepped forward and identified themselves as being interested and willing to see people with MS. Those are good resources for you.
And does it matter, Dr. Rolak, what type of MS you have in terms of selecting a doctor?
Not necessarily. I think the doctor that has an interest and an expertise in MS is going to be able to cover all the different types of MS and all the different issues that might come up. But that is why you want someone who is a specialist in MS, if at all possible, because there are different types and different issues, and you want someone who's familiar with all of that.
And in your experience, how much networking goes on amongst patients in terms of recommending one doctor or another?
Well, I think quite a bit. I think I know as a physician myself, I'm always pleased if I have a patient who comes to me because one of my own patients recommended me. And so I know that patients do get together and talk about whether their MS doctor seems to be paying attention to them or helping them or knows what he's doing. And so honestly, that's often a good source as well.
Now, I know we've all had experiences of having walked out of a doctor's office thinking, darn, I should have asked question X or Y or Z. How can a person get the most out of a doctor appointment? What do you recommend?
Well, that's a good question. I think the main point that I emphasize is to prepare yourself in advance of the appointment. When you're set up to see a doctor, you know that you're going to go in there and have an office visit, but that you're going to only have a limited time with the doctor. He has other patients before and after you. So you want to use that time efficiently. So what I tell people to do is to really organize your thoughts and prioritize what you want to get out of that. For example, you might say, doctor, I have three main concerns with my office visit today. I'm interested in, let's say, my bladder, interested in my tremors, and interested in my side effects to the medications. So these are the things that I want done. Well, now the doctor knows what to focus on, how much time to spend, and exactly what he can do for you. So I think if you go in there and let the doctor know up front, how are you doing? What are the problems? What are you expecting to get out of this? I think you're going to have a much more efficient and effective visit. I also tell people that at the end of the visit, as you're leaving, just take a minute or so to review with the doctor exactly what he went over. Again, you may have talked about two or three or four different things. He may have mentioned a new medication and so on. This can sometimes get confusing. So at the end, as you're leaving, say, now, doctor, just to make sure I got this right, we're going to do X, Y, and Z, correct? So those are the things that I recommend.
Do a quick review. How about taking notes? Do you recommend patients actually write things down during the visit?
I think that's very helpful. I think it's sometimes helpful to write things down before the visit. So again, you can come in, you can have your notes there, and remind yourself, here are the key questions. And then again, after the visit, or as the doctor is talking, jot down a few of the key points that he made. I really think that helps a lot.
And what about the issue, Dr. Rolak, of having someone else there with you, be it a healthcare assistant, a caregiver, or whatever?
A lot of people do that, and I find it useful. Many people tell me that, frankly, they like having someone there for just moral support. They like having someone there because visits to the doctor often make people anxious. They're sort of nervous about seeing the doctor, and so it's hard for them to listen to what the doctor's saying. And having a third party there who can tell them after the visit, remember, this is what the doctor said, you know, that's really useful. So, yeah, I encourage that.
And from a doctor's point of view, does it make any difference to you whether someone comes along?
Oh, no, not at all. In fact, again, I often find it helpful because that other person often fills me in on things that the patient themselves doesn't want to tell me or forgot to tell me or is embarrassed to tell me or so on. Often they'll say, now remember, you were going to tell the doctor so-and-so. So I find that extra source of information to be very useful.
So what can a patient do, Dr. Rolak, and I'm sure none of your patients have ever been in this position, if they are not happy with their doctor's care?
Well, thank you, Rick, but yes, I've had patients not happy with my care, and there's a lot of reasons why that might happen. Sometimes it's not the doctor's fault. Sometimes it's not the patient's fault. I think we all have this idea that, oh, for example, you may be a wonderful person, and you may meet a wonderful woman, and you're both wonderful people, but that doesn't mean you have to get married. And so sometimes two perfectly reasonable people just might not happen to hit it off or get along. And so if for some reason you're not happy with your doctor's care, I usually think about whether or not this is something I could simply discuss with them. In other words, if the reason you're not happy is because you were kept waiting or the office staff was rude or the doctor didn't quite understand you, if there's something you can explain to them, gee, doctor, I wasn't happy because of so-and-so, or I wish something else had happened, or this is something that upset me. You know, that's very reasonable. You know, one person talks to another about something, and you apologize, and you move on, and you're fine. But if you're not happy with your doctor because of something that doesn't seem likely to change, then I think you need to look for another doctor. For example, if you're not happy with your doctor's personality, if you met them, spent this time with them, talked with them, and realized, you know, we're not hitting this off. There's no doctor-patient relationship here. Or if you come to appreciate, I don't think this person understands MS or has a real feel for my MS, I don't think that's going to change, then I think what you can do is think to yourself, well, let me look for another doctor where maybe we hit it off a little better, their personality's a little better, I'm a little more confident that their approach is the same as my approach.
I would imagine a patient might feel a little uncomfortable, of course, in a situation telling a doctor, gee, I'm going to try somebody else. Should they go to their doctor and say, can you recommend another doctor?
I think that's definitely true. And doctors actually sort of like that feedback in the sense that if I recommend a doctor to a patient, I appreciate if the patient comes back to me and says, you know, that doctor you recommended didn't work out for whatever reason. if I keep getting feedback of that sort, then I'm going to start thinking I should be using a different doctor. I shouldn't keep making these referrals. So you're right. A lot of times you don't want to be confrontational, but you can go back to your primary care doctor and say, that MS doctor you referred me to, we didn't get along for whatever reason. Let's pick another one. Or, again, the MS Society, whoever, you can call them and say, give me a second choice or a third choice. I want a second opinion and so on. Really, there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, let's talk about MRIs for a moment, because MRIs are a standard part of care for a person with MS these days. Yet many people who receive an MRI, it can be a little bit anxiety-provoking because it's kind of a strange thing. Do you have any tips on prepping yourself for an MRI?
Sure. I guess one of the things I would say right off the bat is that it really shouldn't be something that makes you very anxious, because it's not a test that is at all painful or anything that's really going to hurt you. I think the main problem with the MRI is that it's just rather intimidating, and I can understand how people are a little, almost even frightened or certainly anxious by it. I think the best way to prepare yourself is with information. As with most anything else, knowledge is power. If you know what's going on, if you're aware of what's happening, you're not taken by surprise, you're not fear of the unknown, then I think people do better. So most doctor's offices, most MRI offices have brochures that explain what's going to happen, things they can send you in advance, things you can read about on what's going to happen when you show up for your MRI. The main problem with the MRI is that it's a machine, like an X-ray machine, where you just lie on a table and they take pictures of what's going on. But the table you lie on is rather confining, and the machine makes a lot of noise. So here you are in this tight little area with a lot of noise going on, and some people get very claustrophobic and nervous about all this. So I think trying to calm down, again, understanding that it's just a lot of noise going on and nothing else, I think just having that knowledge helps make everything go more smoothly. You know, if worse comes to worse, also, what we commonly do is we'll give people a little bit of a sedative, a little bit of a tranquilizer to calm them down. We're used to giving people some kind of medication before any sort of medical procedure just to relax them and calm them down. And we do that all the time with an MRI scan. So that's always an option.
Well, a lot of your suggestions today, Dr. Rolak, go to the point of being an advocate for your own care and becoming involved in your care and your medical team. Why do you think it's an important philosophy for people to adopt, and how can someone best be an advocate for him or herself?
Well, I think it does help to be an advocate for yourself, frankly, because I'm not sure anyone else is going to be an advocate for you. I think you do have to take charge of things, and if there are certain things you want done, issues you want addressed, symptoms you want treated, and so on, I think you're the person that needs to do that. And a good way to be an advocate for yourself is also not just to focus on the purely medical issues, like what is a prescription for this symptom, but to also talk with your doctor and providers about things like handicapped parking stickers for your car, or family leave to take off of work, or these kind of things that are not so strictly medical. Advocating for those and making sure your doctor is aware that you need help with that stuff too is very helpful.
We're just about out of time for today, Doctor. Thanks again for being with us and helping us to understand ways to live healthy with MS. And we look forward to having your colleague, Chris Ann Urban, a registered dietitian, join us for the final webcast in the series. Thanks again, Dr. Rolak.
Thank you, Rick.
The National MS Society is proud to be a source of information for you about multiple sclerosis. Our comments are based on professional advice, published experience, and expert opinion, but do not represent individual therapeutic recommendation or prescription. For specific information and advice, consult a qualified physician. If you have a question that wasn't addressed, please email us at mslearnonline@nmss.org. If you'd like more information on multiple sclerosis, click on the resources link on your screen, or call the chapter nearest you for an answer to your question. You can reach your chapter by calling 1-800-FIGHT-MS, 1-800-344-4867. And you may also want to check the National MS Society's website, where you'll find more information about today's topic and a menu of other webcasts available to participate in. Funding for this program was provided as an unrestricted educational grant from these National MS Society chapters. For the National MS Society, I'm Rick Turner, wishing you health and happiness.